Talk Show.
Recorded live.
You're listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more. Welcome back to the Geocaching Podcast. This is episode 15. We actually have a temporary co-host on the show today. It's going to be Daryl W4. We'll get into that a little bit later here. First, I want to remind you guys that we are live. 724-444-7444 is the number to call, and the TalkCast ID is 7525. And if you don't have a PIN, go ahead and use PIN 436-222-4302. That's Geocache02 on the PIN pad. Remember, too, go to our show notes at geocachingpodcast.info. If you guys remember the coin contest that we talked about last week, if you listen live on or participate in any of the shows this month, you are entered into a drawing to win a coin. So it definitely pays off to listen live. You have four shows you can listen to this month. So definitely do that. Go to the Talk Show, get a pin, and you can be on live on our show and be entered into that contest. Today's sponsor for this show is GoToMeeting.com. These days, whether you're in business or simply just want to share something with your friends and family, email, voicemail, something, it just isn't enough. That's why you should try GoToMeeting. It's a web conferencing solution that will revolutionize how you communicate with your business associates, friends, and family. It's real versatile. It's like you're all in the same room. You can share your same computer screen, and it's low flat fee pricing. Try it yourself today, free for 45 days. Just go to gotomeeting.com/podcast. That's gotomeeting.com/podcast. Try GoToMeeting free for yourself today. Today on our show, we do, like I said earlier, have a temporary co-host, Daryl W4. Go ahead and introduce yourself a little bit.
Hey, I'm also the host of the Cachemaniacs podcast, along with Adrian Scholl, who goes by Firefly03. And let's talk about what we've got on today's show. We've got some news on GC upgrades, the GPS Adventure Maze exhibit, and we're going to talk a little bit today about how to pick a GPSR for yourself for geocaching, or maybe even for your friends.
So let's get to that today. What are the new features on GC.com? First thing I think you'll notice is the Yahoo Maps on the cache pages. What is your experience with that, Daryl? Have you noticed that's any better? Do you like them?
You know, I have to agree with some of the comments that I've seen. I do like the look of the Yahoo Maps better. But what I'm finding is that in many cases, you know, especially if you're looking in a park or in a less populated area, it's just too tight a view that you can't get any kind of reference for where this cache is located. So I find myself having to go to the Google Maps much more often now.
I have noticed that too. I noticed usually you'll just get like a street. You won't actually see like the surrounding streets. And I more than anything have found myself going to the Google Maps also, which is a pain. I would much rather see them implement the Google Maps API where I can actually slide out right on the cache page.
Oh, absolutely. I think Google has a superior product as far as the maps go. But there are some people who have had problems with the Google Maps, and the Yahoo Maps seem to be a little bit more compatible, so I do understand why they made that decision.
What have you heard that's been negative about the Google?
Well, a lot of people have had issues with the Google software, either not wanting to run on their machine or just bogging down the machine completely. And this is mostly on older machines, particularly like the ones that would have shipped with Windows 98. So if you have an older browser, if you have older software or just a really slow computer and not enough RAM, Google Maps seems to have more issues than does Yahoo Maps.
Okay, the other thing that I've noticed on the GC page, which is a huge thing, is sending the waypoint to your Garmin GPS right away. I've tried it, and I like it if I'm just loading one or two caches up. What do you think about that?
Well, I haven't had a chance to actually use it yet. I'm so fixed on my workflow of using the Pocket Queries. But one of the things that I noticed, and I kind of wish that they would have made a little bit more clearly, is the fact that they're using a Garmin API. So this particular engine only works with the Garmin GPSs. So you're not going to find the support for any of the other GPSs, including Magellan, Cobra. I believe DeLorme has some out now. So this is only going to work for the Garmins, and it'd be nice if they actually said that on there rather than making people think it might work.
Yeah, but I was pretty impressed, though, because I have an eTrax Legend, one of the old eTrax Legends, and it works perfect with my unit. You mentioned the Pocket Queries. I actually just this week got my premium membership, so I'm actually just starting with the Pocket Queries, but I have loaded a couple, one or two, into my GPS straight from the webpage, and I did that just because I wanted to try it out. And it is pretty slick, though. I mean, you just plug your GPS in. It's actually a plug-in for your browser, so you have to load it in one time, but you don't notice it after that. You just click the button, and it connects right to your GPS and loads the one waypoint that you click in there. What I wish that they would do, though, would be at the bottom of, like, say, the search page, be able to, you know how you can download all the LOC files, I wish you'd be able to download all of them right to your GPS, too, instead of having to download each one separately.
Sure. Now, what I do see that's particularly useful for myself is going to be when I have to go out for a first defined attempt, because
yes,
this will eliminate a lot of that headache, especially with two GPSs that have to get loaded pretty quick rather than jumping in the car and plugging them in while we were driving.
Yeah.
This is going to be very nice.
Now, this still won't help for my first defined attempts, though, because I have the notification coming right to my BlackBerry. So if I'm out and not with my computer, I still have to hand program them in. But
yeah. Well, you go and get like an EVDO card, and then you'll be all set.
That's true.
You just have to find someone to pay for the service.
Yes, I would be. I think that would be a downfall to me, though, because I would always be on the internet everywhere I went. That probably would not be a good thing.
Yeah, it's always nice to be disconnected at some point.
It is, and I think my wife appreciates that too.
I would imagine so.
So she sometimes gets kind of annoyed when I'm always talking about geocaching sometimes, but you know, I guess I have to give it a break sometime.
Now, what have you heard about the GPS Adventures Maze?
Not a whole lot. I've not actually talked to anyone who's gone. I know that there's been people from our area around here who went to the opening event because it was actually in Indiana. I wasn't able to make the event, but like I said, I really wanted to go. I've just read a little bit about what they've talked about it on their webpage, but it seems like a cool thing for the kids.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, what I've heard about it sounds really incredible. It sounds like they've done a lot of work on it, but I'd really like to see some photos, and as of yet, I haven't seen any photos of the event or of the maze itself.
So the only thing that I've seen is pictures of people with Jeremy Irish from the actual opening event.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of those, but I have no idea what they've really done. And, you know, they talk about the satellite technology and how it can be used, and it's not, from what I've heard, geocaching-centric. It's more about how the technology works, which I'd really like to see.
Yeah, one of the things that they mention on the GPSmaze.com, which is their website for this maze, is that the key messages are they have what it looks like is four different satellite rooms. They have the history of navigation, and then the great outdoors, and GPS today, and the future of GPS, and how it's changing and changing the way we live. So, yeah, I would definitely like to see how they present it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm really curious what they're doing for the clues that supposedly guide you from room to room through the actual maze, because that's supposed to be where a lot of the interesting facts are.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. What I did know, though, is that I noted that the people who have gone through the maze actually have a new icon on their geocaching page.
Oh, that's pretty interesting.
So, yeah, it says GPS Maze, and it's got a little Signal the Frog on top of the little world. It's kind of cool, and it's a new icon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we always like the new icons.
Oh, yeah. Another thing, I'm still reading from the webpage, but it says it's a 2,500 square foot maze that simulates the experiences of GPS and geocaching in four environments: city, local park, back county, and historic site. Its wall panels feature thematic graphics up to 12 feet long and 7 feet high, and of different like lakes and mountains and valleys, streets and structures. It seems like it'd be kind of cool, at least to see. I mean, it is put on. It's not just geocaching that puts it on. It's also I forget who else actually puts it on.
Well, I can't remember how to pronounce the name of the museum that it's actually hosted in, but I know that they were part of construction of the exhibit. But one of the things that I found interesting was that Magellan is actually a technology sponsor. So I'm wondering if there's some special fake GPSs that were built for this event to guide people through the maze.
And that would be interesting.
That'd be some cool technology to see.
It would, because, I mean, obviously you're not going to be able to get the real GPS because it's inside. I'm taking it. It's inside. I mean,
yeah. So it better be if they've got those nice murals. Otherwise, it won't be lasting very long.
No. So with it inside, I mean, I'm not sure how they're getting. I mean, they obviously wouldn't get satellite. So if they are using fake, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I can imagine ways to make that work, even just with like little. All RFID stuff is really big right now. So if they just put little RFID tags in each of the rooms, I could see how they might be able to build something even that way. But yeah, there's so many ways to get this stuff to work in a fake system. It'd be interesting to find out what they've done and, quite frankly, how much it cost.
Yeah, and I know that they're planning on moving it around to different locations. So that'd be interesting to see also a schedule. Right now I know that the one in Indiana is the only one that has it yet, and I would like to actually go down there and check it out. I mean, it's not too far from me, so maybe someday before it moves, I'll get a chance to go down there and check it out.
Well, I'm hoping they'll keep it through Geobash, and we'll have a chance to run down there as we're out that way for the Midwest Geobash.
Yeah, that would be definitely cool.
Really busy if it is.
Oh, I'm sure, since there's going to be lots and lots and lots of people coming on to Indiana here.
Oh, yeah. Now, the big question is, do you think this is going to convert some of those muggles into geocachers?
Let's hope.
I'd hope so. And they'll probably need some GPSs, so why don't we talk about what to look for when we're picking out a geocaching GPS?
All right, sounds good. Let me tell you guys, when I first started geocaching, I started with a laptop and an external GPS unit that you have to put like 4 batteries in, and it's big and clunky, and it hooks right to the serial port of your laptop, and I was walking through the forest with my laptop, which is not ideal, especially in the summer where you're hot and sweating on the laptop and looking down at that, and then you miss the log that you're supposed to be stepping over, and you end up falling and throwing your laptop all over the place. That's never good for laptops or yourself because you're falling. So I moved up after that, but what would be the first thing that you would think that we should look for and we're finding a GPSR for geocaching?
Well, you know, almost any GPS can find a geocache. The problem is, how do you find one that's going to be easy enough for you to use when you're looking for the geocache? Well, for me, the first thing I would look for is the ability to load the waypoints, either through a serial cable or USB, and quite frankly, at this point, I wouldn't want to do it through serial anymore.
No.
You know, especially with the serial ports being phased out on most computers, the USB cable is a very quick and easy option.
Yeah, I'm finding that out right now. I still have the Etrex Legend, which does have the serial cable for it, and I haven't really run into that problem up until now, because my home computer actually has a serial port on it, and so that's not a problem. But what I'm running into is my laptop that I have. It does not have a serial port, so I'm actually toying with the idea of buying one of those USB serial port converters.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Definitely, if I was to buy a new GPS now, I would definitely go with the USB.
Yeah, and you can get a good USB to serial converter. Keyspan is one of the ones that's typically noted as being one of the better, more compatible USB to serial converters. Problem is, those things can be as much as $60.
I've noticed that. I've done some research this week, and they've been I found them anywhere from like $32 to $60.
Yeah, well, and the problem is, some of those less expensive ones, you'll get them, and they won't work with some of the programs or some of the devices.
Mm-hmm.
And over again, when I've looked at this, because I actually started out with a couple of serial GPSs myself, both of them made by Magellan. And I loved those units, but they really weren't geocaching ready. But there was a good way to get started. And so, you know, the Sport Track that I started with, I think you can pick those up off eBay for like $20.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can't beat a $20 GPS for getting started, and then you can always upgrade later too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had a hard time finding serial adapters that would work right. I ended up with the Keyspan because that's what everyone was suggesting, and it just worked. So after all of the problems with these generic ones, the Keyspan just popped right in and worked instantly. So that does end up being a bit of a problem when you're trying to find those adapters.
Yeah, I'm going to have to keep that in mind because, like I said, I am looking for one now as my laptop does not have a serial port on it. So, but I know how important what you mean about it being important for some way to load in the waypoints, because my dad actually has a GPS that he got not for geocaching, but since then I've talked to him about geocaching and he loves doing it now, but he has no way at all. His did not come with a cable, and so he's got no way to load them in. So when we're driving down the road, I'm trying to enter those in by hand for him, and that's no fun if you're doing more than one or two caches.
Oh yeah, well, and I'll be honest that a lot of the high finders have never even hooked the GPS up to the computer, so it's not mandatory, but boy, does it make your life easy. Yeah, it's a matter of clicking one button to download, let's say 500. Caches into your GPS, or sitting there and entering in each one manually. And you can certainly see the time savings very quickly if you have to enter them manually versus just loading.
Yeah, I don't know how the high finders do it without doing them automatically. I know I get annoyed really quickly, especially when we're trying to drive down the road and I'm looking down, and I get sick really easy when I'm doing that, and that's never good either.
Yeah, well, you definitely need two people in the car if you're doing that. Otherwise,
yeah.
You can get into some worse problems than having to worry about rubbing off buttons on your GPS. And most of those guys don't have any labels left on their buttons.
Man, that's crazy.
Well, you know, we had Firefly had the Explore 600 that we used for a couple of months before we got fed up with it and had to replace it. But even the little joystick on there, and we were loading everything from the computer, but even the little joystick, the labels had rubbed off. So that's something that you'll probably run into no matter what GPS you find, is that after a period of time, those labels will come off. So memorize them.
Now, how many, just out of curiosity, how many GPSR units do you guys actually have between the two of you?
Let's see. That's a good question. We have a number of specialty units, but I would say we have about 9 GPSRs right now. We have 3 different Magellan units. We have 6 Garmin units. And I have a specialty unit that's just for my camera. I can't remember who makes that one. But yeah, if, 3 of those Garmin units are actually the Rhino 2530 series. Which was a great concept. Unfortunately, it didn't really work for us very well, especially when we were standing in the middle of a field and watching the cache rotate around us 300 feet away in any direction it felt like being at that point.
And that's never good when you're trying to find a specific location.
No, it's not. So, yeah, we ended up replacing those with the new ones, and that's when we got the Explorist for Dree to try, and then I had the 60 CXX, and the reason we went to the 60 CSX was simply that it is the gold standard right now, or was then. I think they're coming out with a replacement for it fairly soon. But the 60 series was supposed to be the best of the GPSs for geocaching, and I was quite happy with that one. But we didn't want to have two of the same antennas. You know, a lot of the time you'll go out, try to find a cache, and you'll find it's hidden by someone who has like a Sport Track, for instance, which does find the location differently than a Garmin unit does. And because it has a slightly different antenna, it will even be a little bit more off. So by having the two different types of antennas and the two different units, we found that between the two of us, we would always find the cache quicker. Well, when we replaced her Explorer 600, we ended up with a Legend CX, which has the patch antenna, and we're still usually under tree cover. We're usually about 20, 30 feet apart, and it really helps. And you can kind of tell because some of these people are always closer to her antenna, or her unit rather, than mine, and some of the people are closer to mine. So you can kind of tell the people who've had the E-Trex and Magellans versus the 60s.
That's an interesting study, like, to see the difference between who had what and who's more accurate now when trying to find.
Well, and one of the things we found is that the accuracy does not seem to follow the antennas so much, because there are some other factors that can get in the way. But we found that, in general, the 60s tend to lose the signal far less often than the E-Trex does. And the E-Trex, when it does have a signal, tends to be as accurate, if not more accurate, as the 60. But one of the big problems we've had with our 60 is when we get out into something like the urban jungle, we get a lot of refractions, and mine will move more than my 60 will move more than her E-Trex does. Because it's more sensitive, it's picking up more of the signals that you don't want to be picking up. So that's kind of a trade-off.
You mentioned a little bit about features for that can be found on a GPS for geocaching. What would some of the features, if I'm new to geocaching or want to buy a GPSR for geocaching, what would some of the features be that I should look for, do you think?
Well, some of the off-the-shelf features, obviously you're going to want to know that it can hold at least 500 waypoints, because if it's not going to be able to hold 500 waypoints, you're not going to be able to do the paperless caching. And then there are some extended geocaching features that some of the units will have. For instance, the Explorer series has a really nice feature, which is the geocaching navigator, I believe they call it, or geocaching manager, I think. And that is actually like a stripped-down version of the notorious GSAC software. And if you don't know what GSAC is, Geocaching Swiss Army Knife, I'd recommend you go and check out that website. It's Windows-only software, but does a fantastic job of managing the geocaches. Well, they give you that software, the stripped-down version of it, but they give you that software specifically for their GPSs. And when you load the caches into your unit, it has the icons right there for whether it's a traditional cache, multi-cache, unknown cache. Actually, I'm not sure if it did the unknown cache or not, but it had the virtual cache icons, earth cache icons. So on the map, you're staring at all of the different types of cache icons, and you're not sitting there staring at just a pin.
Wow, that's cool, because I don't know how many times that I've gone out. I see a GC number on my unit, and I go out there and have no idea where it's at because I don't have any of the information with me, and I don't know if it's a virtual, I'm supposed to be looking for some information, or if it's a multi and I need to find something else, or a puzzle cache. I have no idea. That would be helpful.
Oh, yeah, that was very nice. I missed that feature, but you can get that feature back, and a lot of the Garmin units and some of the third-party units, from what I understand as well, with Geocaching Swiss Army Knife, but there are some other trade-offs with doing that. Garmin has a feature that I like right out of the box, and which is all I use, which is anything marked with that little geocache treasure chest, you can bring that up in the special geocaching mode, and you just go from cache to cache to cache, finding the next ones, looking for that little treasure chest icon. When you found it, you click the little found icon, and it puts a little entry into your calendar inside the GPS. So very easily you can go back at the end of the day and figure out which caches you hit that day, and it just pulls them off the list as it changes it from the little treasure chest icon to an open treasure chest icon. So that's a really nice feature, but when you switch with some custom icons that you can do on some of the Garmin units, and GSAC will also support that, you can again get back the icons that you'd have with like the Magellan version. Mm-hmm. However, you can't use that nice feature of being able to change the geocaches from unfound to found.
You did mention GSAC, and just for anyone who's not used it before, it can be found at gsak.net. And I actually just tried it this first time for this week. It's a little bit daunting at first because there's so many features that right out of the box that you can do, and it's so customizable that at first you kind of have to take a step back because there's so much you can do. But once you realize what the power of the filters and the macros are, it's some really sweet software.
Oh, absolutely. And that will allow you to load your GPS right from that software. And what you can do is end up with huge lists of caches. Filter it down to the ones that you might want to do that day, but still have it handy on your laptop. So if you don't happen to get to a hotel that has Wi-Fi or whatever, you don't have to worry about not having the most current caches available, because you can just download the ones right off of GSAC.
Yeah, that's definitely helpful. Do you find that the, I know that there's, you know, the color screens and the not color screens. Do you find that the color screens, I know that they're eye candy and they look better, but do you like them better versus the just the black and white screens, or do you think it really matters?
Well, I have to be honest that I do think the color screens are better and easier when you're geocaching. That being said, I don't think there's anything wrong with a grayscale screen. Grayscale screens will save you some power, too, but they're pretty much phasing out the grayscale screens at this point, and you're finding almost entirely new GPSs outside of the really low, I'd say probably sub-150 lines, are all coming out in color. And that's going to be more and more common as color screens start to push the grayscale screens off the market. And it's a matter of critical mass. Now that color screens are more desirable and cheaper to produce, there's going to be more of them, which is going to drive down the price even more. So, yeah, I think we're going to see more color screens. And, you know, I wasn't a big fan of color until I actually got it. And just little things like finding your breadcrumb trail are so much easier with a color map behind it than with the black and white map.
I guess I never thought of that. I mean, I myself have a black and white screen, a grayscale screen, so I never thought about the color being easier to find the breadcrumb trail. So.
No, and that being said, too, if you don't have maps, I don't think the color is really worth anything. You know, you might as well stick with grayscale because you're not looking at information that really needs to be as discernible, because you're looking at just your arrow pointing you to the cache.
Mm-hmm.
Or some text.
Now, yeah. Now, some of the units have like a mini SD card or an SD card that can be taken out. Do any of yours have a card like that in them?
Actually, all but a few of ours do. We typically don't really use those cards too much. I've got on my 60 CSX a half gig card, and the problem that we've run into is I like using the topographical maps on mine. Well, the unit only supports X number of, I forget what they call them, but basically sectors.
Mm-hmm.
And I've exceeded the number of sectors that I can load onto that card, and I haven't even filled 256 megs. So if you're getting something like the 60 CSX and want to go for the topo maps, I wouldn't bother with anything much more than a 256 meg card. We have the same kind of situation on Firefly's Legend CX, and that one we want to get the City Navigator, I believe it is, the street maps. So again, we have one that has the topo and one that has the street map, so we can do some street routing and see, you know, better detail on streets than what we get off the topo. But hers will be able to use that card better because the street maps aren't as limited, from what I understand, than the topos.
Hmm.
But unfortunately, the Garmin units don't let you, at least that I've been able to find out, load the waypoints onto that card. Magellan actually does allow you to put multiple waypoint files, or I think they actually call them point of interest files on that one, but it will actually allow you to put the point of interest files on the card. So there's a limit with that cool geocaching feature of 200 geocaches, but you have an unlimited number of files. So if you had a 1 gig card, for instance, you could load up 30 different files for your entire region, just blocked out in counties or however you wanted to work that, and just load up whichever waypoints you wanted.
Yeah, then you have so many waypoints, and you have to work on keeping them current, though.
Absolutely.
With your database. So.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why we just like using waypoints in the traditional mode on our Garmins, because we just wipe them all out and reload them all every time we go out.
Mm-hmm. Now, price point. For geocaching,
well,
what would you say? What would you say is the price point? Like what?
Talking about new GPSRs, you can certainly find a sub-$100 GPSR that will fit the bill to get started. Most people I know who have gotten those sub-$100 units end up replacing them within the first year, though, because they want more of those features. One of the nice things is that's always something that you can pass down to your geocaching buddy, to a friend who might be interested in geocaching, or keep around as a spare unit. So you're not going to lose that investment. But if you've already gotten into geocaching and really enjoy it, went out with a friend or something, I'd recommend jumping up. And it's only about $250 for the next level that gets you the mapping and serial cables or USB cables and gets you some software to get into it. So it is a significant jump from the entry level to the mapping, but if you're really into it, I think it's going to be worth it.
So I know I got my GPS a while ago. I think I paid like $75 for it. And like you said, mine is an entry level one, and we're fairly happy with it. I mean, we haven't had the. It would be nice to definitely have more of those features like that, and hopefully someday we can get to that. But for the casual geocaching, yeah, it definitely works just fine, because it does have the ability to load the data with the serial cable. So yeah, we find it works for us.
Oh yeah, well, and most people you'll find have started out on what they refer to as the eTrex Yellow, which is a basic eTrex model, and that does have the serial connection. Now, that's not true on the entry-level Magellan. I want to say it's the Explorist 100 or maybe even 200. I'd have to go look that up again. But the entry-level Explorist does not have any data connector, so you'll have to jump up a little bit to get that data connector. But having that data connector is going to be important as you get into caching. You know, if you're only doing one or two caches a day, entering it by hand isn't a big deal. When you start doing 20 or 30 a day, your fingers are going to start to get tired.
Very quickly.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm surprised that Magellan wouldn't put a data cable with it. I guess maybe if you're not doing geocaching, you know, and you maybe only need to mark your car or the trailhead, it wouldn't be too bad. But if you're going out trying to find lots of stuff.
At a price point of, I've seen those things for as little as $50 new.
Oh, man, yeah.
So, you know, if you're looking for something to give to the kids that you don't care if it gets busted up as much, you know, that'd be a great GPS for that. But as far as a good geocaching GPS, yeah, I honestly couldn't recommend that one.
No.
But you can always go up in GPSs too, the 60 CSX or 60 CX, and the difference is simply whether it has an electronic compass and barometric pressure in it, is a great unit. You'll find you don't lose the satellites as often. So if you're having problems with coverage and foliage, like under tree cover, that kind of thing, the 60 CX, CSX or CX will fix that problem. But that one starts at about $450 list.
Yeah, that's a little pricey for some people.
Absolutely. And you do get a lot more features for that. But unless you really need it, you'd be perfectly happy with something like the Legend or the Vista. I'd recommend the X model, though, because that gets you the USB and the expansion. Both very nice features.
Now, as far as GPSR companies, I know it's just a preference, but what would you prefer?
Well, I typically tend to recommend to people the same thing I recommend when they're buying a camera. If you know people who have Canons, go out and buy a Canon. If you know people who have Nikons, go out and buy Nikons. Predominantly, most of the cachers I know use Garmin. And it's really nice because whenever we go to an event, there's always someone there who has a USB cable, and both of ours are USB, and a laptop. So if there's special caches for the event, we can just hook up and download. Unfortunately, the Magellan users, there's usually not someone there with a cable for them, so they have to go and enter in the caches manually. And like the event we were just at this weekend, there were something like 20 new caches. That's a lot to be entering in by hand.
Yeah.
Especially
yeah.
at an event, and I think we had almost 90-degree weather.
Oh, man. Now, you saying that you find that a lot of people, geocachers anyways, are using the Garmin. Maybe that's why geocaching.com hooked up with Garmin to use their plugin, because they're finding most people are using their units.
Yeah, absolutely. Garmin is predominantly the GPS that geocachers are using. But the real reason I think that the Groundspeak hooked up with Garmin on that is because Garmin has it available. Magellan does not. And that also kind of leads into another point, which is that if you're looking at the mapping, you might want to take a look at the software license for whatever company you're going to get those maps from. Magellan tends to be very restrictive with their software license. Garmin is much more permissive, and it's a much easier license to work under legally. So we like the Garmins better for that reason as well.
What do you find as the restrictions? I mean, what is it? I mean, what restrictions do you find that you come under for the Magellans?
Well, you know, it's been about a year and a half since I last looked at the license. But one of the big things was something to the effect of you can only load it on one GPS, and you can only load that one GPS. So if you replaced your GPS, you had to buy new maps legally to do that.
Wow.
So you can't transfer your maps. Garmin, as I recall, and I think it does depend on which mapping product you have, but as I recall, Garmin actually lets you load maps onto all of your personal GPSs. So if you had an office, I don't believe they'd let you load all of the office GPSs, but if you had one for your car, one for your home, or one for off-roading or whatever, you could have the same maps loaded into all of those. So that's a lot easier to buy, you know, let's say an $80 mapping package for three GPSs than to have to go out and buy that $80 package
for every GPS.
Yeah.
Well, and that's one of the things that I liked about the GSAC licensing, too. They have it available, so once you buy your license, you can do that for all of your computers. They say, you know, don't take it to your family or your friends, but, you know, if you have an office computer, a work computer, a laptop computer, you can use that same license on all three of those computers for your GSAC program.
Sure, yeah, it's licensed to the individual. Yeah, very nice licensing.
Yeah, I really like that. That was definitely the selling point for me. So,
yeah, I'd go back and look at those software agreements if you're looking at getting a mapping GPS and really wanted to get into it, but that was one of the big things that's moved us off of the Magellan units. And, you know, I started out with Magellan and had bad luck with my first Garmin, so I was a diehard Magellan guy. And I'm entirely Garmin at this point.
Yeah, I know, like I said, I have a Garmin, and I know if I was going to buy another one, I don't think I would even look at any other company. I would go definitely with a Garmin. I'm pretty happy with my Garmin that I have.
Yeah, I'd say the one that I'd be interested in looking at as a supplemental GPS, not as a primary, would be that new, I believe it's DeLorme that has it, and there was one other company I think that had it as well, that actually has satellite maps built into it. I've heard that it doesn't work very well. They have issues with the performance on the thing, and there were some other battery issues and whatnot. So it's obviously a first-generation product. But I like the idea of, you know, on top of just having the ability to do the topo maps, to be able to load in the satellites.
Yeah, that would definitely be a feature. I know that usually for the geocaches, if I'm only going to hit one or two, I like going out and looking at Google Maps or Google Earth and seeing, you know, getting kind of an idea of, you know, how far into the forest is this geocache. That would be definitely cool to do on the go when you're actually at the forest.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and it works even as well as, you know, which tree is it under.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest that I found at least four FTFs without a GPS using nothing but a Google Map printout. So if you don't want to get a GPS and want to start geocaching, it's entirely possible. You know, there's a few people who have found thousands of caches out there, and those guys haven't used a GPS for any of them. So it's possible, but they'll typically know how to read topo maps and whatnot before they even try.
Yeah, I found one one cache. It wasn't an FTF, but I was second to find. And I didn't use my GPS on that because I actually left my GPS at home, and it was at work, and I saw it come up, and so I ran out and used the Google Map, and I found it, but it definitely would have been probably, well, in that case, it was just as easy without it because it's right along the road. But if it was in the forest, I would say it'd probably be easier with the GPS, though.
Sure. Well, and the Google Maps are a great way to hone your geosense.
Yeah, definitely. Well, do you have any other suggestions for selecting a GPSR for geocaching?
Well, I'm trying to think, and probably the best thing I could suggest is go to a store that you like locally, especially for your first GPSR, and put your hands on the units that you actually want to try. And most of the stores, especially sporting goods stores, will have pretty good return policies on the GPSRs. So if you buy it, take it home, find that it really doesn't work for you, they'll let you trade it in toward another one, give you the purchase price. Now, some of these stores, like Walmart, for instance, apparently is planning on dropping the GPSs because of that return rate. So those guys probably aren't going to be carrying GPSs for much longer.
Mm-hmm.
But especially,
yeah, one of the...
especially
go
like
ahead.
REI over here, if you're a member, they're really good about taking back merchandise. One of our buddies had picked up a eTrex Legend, decided it didn't work for him, so he returned it, I think, 60 or 90 days after he bought it. No questions asked. They took it back and gave him his money back, and he ended up putting it away and hasn't even bought a GPS yet. He's still looking for the one that really works for him.
Yeah, I think as far as finding a GPS, my suggestion is, you know, it's really cool, you know, how big geocaching has become, and the community as far as the GPSR manufacturers sees that, and they're starting to build in stuff, obviously, for geocachers. And so, yeah, I would definitely suggestion, same thing you said, just definitely, you know, go with what you know. If your friend has a unit, you know, play with it a little bit, see if it's something that you like, and if it isn't, then don't get that one. If it is, go out and get it, or like you said, you know, go to a sporting store, a local store, where you can test it, try it. If you don't like it, go ahead and take it back.
And if you have one of the compatible phones and carriers, which I believe right now is still only Sprint in the U.S., you can actually look at Trimble's Geocaching Navigator, and that's a great little application because you don't even have to load it. Your phone just acts as a GPS. You go, where are the caches near me, and it brings them up right out of the geocaching database. Very nice feature.
Yeah, I did look into that, but I had a Sprint Nextel BlackBerry, and they didn't service that. So
no, there's very few phones that work with the service right now. It does cost a monthly fee, which I believe is somewhere around the neighborhood of $8 a month. But
not too bad, though.
No, it is a very nice feature to have. You know, one of the guys locally was showing it to me when it first came out, and I know they've made some improvements to it. But he was just raving about the ability. He was at a meeting one day, ended up the meeting was postponed. He's in a city 100 miles away, flips open his phone, where's the nearest geocache? So he went and hit two or three caches before the meeting in the downtown area.
Yeah, that's definitely a plus.
Yeah, very nice feature to have.
Mm-hmm. Well, with that, I think we're actually going to wrap up our show. Thank you, Daryl, for being on the show as our guest host. The call is still open to anyone who thinks that they want to help me host this show. I really appreciate Daryl stepping up and helping out. It's a lot of fun having a co-host and being able to chat with somebody as opposed to just with yourself. So, but guys, if you're on the trail, go ahead and call our phone number, 206-350-3GPS. Leave us a voicemail. We can play it on the show. Go to our show notes at geocachingpodcast.info. You'll find all of our show notes there and our feeds, and where you can subscribe and get these every week. Also, you can remember Tuesdays 9 p.m. come to the Talkcast or come to talkshoe.com, where you'll find us at Talkcast 7525. You can text chat with us live. You can talk live on the phone. You can ask us any questions. So with that, I will see you guys next week. Some of the music on the show today was provided by the Podshow PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.